Authors Over 50, Writing in Life's Sweetest Third. Authors Over 50's weekly podcast celebrates writers and their journeys to publication. Writing after 50 is a whole story on its own, so let's skip to Life's Sweetest Third and talk with authors about their journey from pen to publish. Welcome, I'm Julia Daly, your host, and I invite you to listen to interviews with writers who've achieved their goal of publishing a book just later in life. We've seen award lists for under 30 or under 40, but I've yet to see lists for those who've achieved a significant milestone of their own, launching a new career and publishing their first book after the age of 50. We will hear about these authors' inspirations, struggles, strategies, and the smell of that first book. These writers' journeys inspire me because I'm one of them. My guest today was born in the Big Apple, but now she calls Southern California home. She began telling stories as soon as she learned to talk. Now she's telling all the stories from her garment industry experiences in humorous mysteries, like the protagonist in her Holly swimsuit mystery series. She is a successful apparel sales executive and was named Best U.S. Author of the Year by NN Lights Book Heaven. Since life without pizza and ice cream as her core food groups wouldn't be worth living, she's a dedicated walker to keep her girlish figure. A voracious reader, she's also an avid stamp collector. She lives with a highly intelligent man and one incredibly brainy but smart aleck adult son who blames his sarcasm on an inherited genetic defect. Welcome to Authors Over 50, Susie Black.
Thank you very much.
Well, Susie, our opening question on Authors Over 50 is always, so what took you so long to write your first book?
Well, I kept a daily journal during my active sales career, and I always wanted to write. I was a journalism major in school, but that was, you know, a whole lot different from being a creative writer. And I had so many great characters to draw from and so many unique experiences of some of the wacko things that I got myself into and out of that I thought, you know what, maybe somebody else would find this stuff funny. So I, to tell you the truth, there are a lot of characters in my real life that I wouldn't have minded knocking off. And this is a good way to do it.
Well, Susie, you are so humorous. You chose to use humor in your mysteries. Are mysteries your favorite choice of books? How did you choose to write this type of book?
I write the kind of books that I read. I love humorous. I love to laugh. I mean, in life, there are so many things that are not funny. And certainly murder is not exactly a funny thing, but the way that it happens can be. But I think that for me, it was always an outlet. And my journal really took me to where I am today.
Well, once you wrote this book, how did you proceed? Did you search for an agent, decide to choose a hybrid, a small press, or did you self-publish?
Well, I started out thinking that I needed an agent. And after about 6 months of not getting anywhere, to be honest with you, an author colleague said to me, you know what? There are lots of small presses out there that don't require agents. And she gave me a few, and I was accepted by five of them. And I was able to select the one that I felt was the best fit for me. And we've been together now for about 2.5 years.
Well, we're just so lucky that there's so many options for us these days. We don't have to get an agent or be with the big five to be successful.
Well, that's true. I look at agents as publishing's answer to real estate agents, because they both don't really care who they sell as long as they make a sale. So your book is not any more important to them than the next guy's, in my humble opinion. I could be wrong, but as a career salesperson, that's my take.
Well, I think that's a very astute observation.
Well, thank you.
What was your inspiration for this book?
Well, for this particular book, there was a real life person who was universally disliked in my industry. And I got to thinking one day, what would it be like if somebody finally, she pushed their buttons too far and they killed her? And from there, it just took off.
Well, you're probably touching on the subject that a lot of people in a lot of offices feel like they need to push somebody out the window.
Well, I think that for me, it's a great outlet. My son is a psychologist, and I have always told him, I said, Alex, you know, you should include this in your therapy. There is nothing more therapeutic than knocking off somebody that you really disliked, and you don't go to jail. You don't have to wear a stripe uniform, and you get to live your life and still kill the person. This is a fantastic outlet.
I agree. How did you determine the plot of this book?
Well, it's sort of an interesting meandering, going to Cleveland by way of Cairo kind of thing, because it didn't start out the way it ended. I have a theory that I allow the characters to sort of give me their opinion. And the character said, no, try it this way. And I kind of looked, okay, fine, sure. And it worked. And what I did is I tried to imagine what would take somebody to finally have had enough with this woman. And it just kind of went from there. It kind of helped writing itself, to be honest with you.
Well, I think our characters do begin speaking to us and directing us and telling us the way they want to go in the book.
Well, what I usually do is I'm sort of a hybrid. I'm not a planner. I'm not a pantser. I kind of have an outline, in a loose one. Very loose. And I write the beginning and the end, and I let the characters take me from the middle to the end. But if I don't like what they've done, I take over them. And if I really hate it, I threaten to either kill them off or write them out. So they learn to behave themselves, because there is nothing as lasting as a relationship based on fear.
I love that, Susie. And that's pretty much the way I write, too. I always know the beginning and the end, and I have to work on that mushy middle.
I think that that is the bane of most authors' existence. Well, not marketing, but we'll get to that later. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that, because you are a salesperson. Uh-huh. And I just wonder if you have found any marketing or publicity methods that worked, or maybe some of those that you tried that didn't work.
Well, I will tell you that being in sales is not a benefit. It is a detriment, because marketing and selling are really two different things. And in my world, I sold to a lot of big box stores. So the difference between publishing and the apparel industry is when you ship the order in the apparel industry, you're done. However, in the publishing industry, when the book is published, you're still responsible for getting the word out there. And personally, I've got to be honest with you, I hate it. It is something that has, it can take over your entire life. I did a cover reveal on the next book. It took me 3 days to get through all the responses. Now, that's the good news and the bad news. I mean, the good news is people are paying attention, but the bad news is I haven't written a word in a week. But what has worked for me, I'm not a big fan of social media. maybe it's my generation. Maybe it's like, I just think Twitter is the silliest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I hope I'm not hurting anybody's feelings, but I always speak my mind. You ask me a question, I'm going to give you my answer, not what I think you want to hear. And I have found that for me, Facebook has been very good because I joined a lot of book clubs where those are serious readers. And I have made it a concerted effort to really focus on that. But I have found that podcasts like yours and blog posts have been fairly effective for me because it is a way to quantify whether you're succeeding or not.
Well, I think all of us deal with those same issues with marketing. And I was in public relations and marketing for most of my career, but doing those activities for someone else or for a college, university, sure, you know, are totally different than trying to tout yourself and toot your own horn. So we all find it very difficult and we're trying to figure it out as we go. And like you said, it takes us so away from our writing.
Well, you know, the thing of it is that in marketing, in the publishing world, you're literally appealing to one reader at a time. It's the most inefficient thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I could take my son's old red wagon and go door to door and be more effective.
That's so true. Well, tell us more about this series. You've written this first book. How many books are in the series, and where is this Holly Swimsuit mystery series headed?
Well, Death by Sample Size was the debut book, and that was published last year. And for 2023, I have four more books that have been contracted and will publish. The book number two will publish mid-February. So there are four more in the series that will be out, and I've got one that is about halfway written, and if I didn't have to market so much, I could probably finish it.
Well, that is wonderful. I mean, you must be quite the prolific writer if you're able to turn books out that quickly.
Well, you know, COVID was right there helping. It was the only positive thing, I think, in last year. My swimwear business was non-existent. People couldn't go anywhere, and I had nothing else to do, so I kept writing. And it was very cathartic. It kept me sane.
Well, why don't you set up a scene for us from your book that you've brought to share today,
and
then read a few paragraphs so we can hear your tone and voice.
Okay. I finally arrived at the California Paramart minutes before being on the road long enough to become the butt of the old joke. I was a young woman when the day began. My footfalls echoed in the nearly empty underground parking garage. I got to the elevator bank and pressed the button. When the elevator doors opened, I had to stop myself short not to step on her. There was Bunny Frank, the buying office big shot, lying diagonally across the car. Her legs were splayed out, and her back was propped against the corner. Her sightless eyes were wide open, and her arms reached out in a come-to-me-baby pose. She was trussed up with shipping tape, like a dressed Thanksgiving turkey ready for the oven, with a bikini stuffed in her mouth. A Gotham swimwear hang tag drooped off her lower lip like a toe tag gone lost. Naturally, I burst out laughing. Before you label me incredibly weird or stone cold, let me just say, genetics are not all they're cracked up to be. If you're lucky, you inherit your Aunt Bertha's sexy long legs or your father's ability to add a bazillion dollar order in his head and get the total correct to the last penny. Without even breaking into a sweat, it's easy to spout at least a million fabulous traits inheritable by the luck of the draw. Did I get those sexy long legs or the ability to add one and one past two without using a calculator? No. Lucky me. I inherited my nana's fear of death, we overcompensated for with the nervous habit of laughing. A hysterical reaction? Think Bozo the Clown eulogizing your favorite aunt.
That is so funny. You have a great sense of humor, and I love those descriptions.
Well, thank you.
Tell us about the editing process that you used.
Well, I kind of do a little bit of both. I like to edit as I go along. The delete button is the greatest invention since the wheel, in my humble opinion. So I edit as I go along. And then when I have done my first draft, I go back and Word has that wonderful little thing where it says search. And I search for words that I have overused, filter words. I look for plot holes and things like that. And I would say that before I turn my manuscript into my editor, I will have gone through this manuscript about a dozen times, to the point where I'm pretty sure I could say it by heart. And I think that I don't know about you, but I could probably edit until my last breath is drawn and still find something. And I'm like, oh, why in the heck didn't I find that before? You find that too?
I mean, that is the bane of my existence. I can edit your work and see every typo, but I cannot see my own because we've been over it so many times. Our eyes just glaze over, you know?
Yep. That's me. Or I get sick of my own book, to be honest with you. It's like, gee, this was so great the first 155,000 times.
Exactly. And I think that's what happens. Somebody asked me one time, how do you know when your book is finished? And I said, when you can't look at it, when you cannot read another sentence of that book, when you're sick to death of it, then you turn it over to that editor.
You hit the nail right on the head. It's like, here, take the damn thing. Oops, sorry.
Exactly.
I have a problem now, but I'm very hard to watch it.
Yes.
Take the darn thing.
I know. And I'm always so amazed at how often I use the same words over and over.
That's a God's truth.
So frustrating.
Well, I have done something that I have a spreadsheet of words that I use, and I take each word, I put it into the search, and it tells you how many times you've used it. I put it into my spreadsheet, and then I take that word and I change it. And then I give myself a reward by saying, okay. Now, I don't know about you, but I am embarrassed to tell you that I used one word in a 65,000 word manuscript 1,144 times. And that is a personal best for me. And I burst out laughing and said, oh, my goodness.
You have to laugh because
I did. I was hysterical.
It's amazing how we do that. Our brains just take over and we don't realize it. I'll use the same word in three or four connecting sentences.
I did that too. Now, when you present a line of swimsuits, you're showing the line. And where are you? You're in a showroom. So the word show turned up, heck, it seemed like every other word.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think was the best money you've ever spent as a writer?
Two things. A computer with a really big screen and the money I invested in my website. And that, I will tell you, I'm not too good at going into it that often, but other people do. And those are the two things that I think are a big benefit.
I think so too. I think those websites really educate our readers and other writers about us. I think they're just vital. Even if you just have a landing page, you've got to have a website these days.
Yes. Well, there are a few things that really intimidate me, but building that was job number one.
What about your family? Do they support your career as a writer?
1,000,000%, yes. They are patient with my incessant, how's this sound? What do you think of this? Is this funny? Are you laughing yet? Or the opposite of, how stupid do you think this sounds? Yeah, I am very fortunate. They, my husband and son are extraordinarily supportive. You?
Yes. Yes, I think those of us who have supportive families are very fortunate.
Yep.
Do you believe in writer's block?
Nope. I do not. If I, I am a firm believer in walk away. I'm a firm believer in whatever you love to do, go do it and come back.
I think that's good advice. Susie, our last interview question is always, our writers over 50 are a unique set. Do you have any advice for writers 50 and above?
I do. Trust your gut. Believe in yourself. Never let anybody step on your dreams. Never let anybody tell you you're too old. And no matter what, keep writing, keep writing, keep writing.
Well, we just appreciate that advice and we appreciate your being with us today. We have been so overwhelmed with those of us in this writing community over the age of 50. And I've interviewed people in their 70s, 80s, and 90s who are still turning out great work. And so I look forward to reading your series and hearing more of that wonderful humor that you have. So thank you so much for being here today. We're happy to say that you're now one of our authors over 50.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and thank you for giving me an opportunity to introduce myself to your audience.
Thank you for joining us today. Please look for Authors Over 50 every Thursday when we will have conversations with accomplished debut novelists over the age of 50. Please subscribe and share with a friend. And check out my own publication journey after 50 at www.juliadaily, that's D-A-I-L-Y, like daily newspaper.com. Until next time, keep reading and writing. And remember, it's never too late to fulfill a dream in life's sweetest third.